The Sicha for Shabbos Devarim, Parshas Devarim, is in Chelek Beis, Volume 2 of Lekutei Sichas. Shabbos Devarim always comes out on Shabbos Chazen, the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, and it's called Shabbos Chazen because of the Haftarah that is read then. But there is also the statement from the Berditcheva, from Levi Yitzchak Berditcheva, that on Shabbos Chazon, the Beis Hamikdash Hashlishi is shown from above to every Jew. And Chazon is Meloshen Re'iyah. Chazon means a vision. So the Beis Hamikdash, the third Beis Hamikdash, is shown, and every Jew has a vision of the Beis Hamikdash from above. However, this vision is described as ri'iyah mezochik, a vision from far, because the word chazein, although it means a vision, it implies, it suggests a vision from a distance. The connection between Shabbos chazein and Parshas Devarim is as follows. Parshas Devarim is the beginning of the fifth sefer of the Torah, which is called Mishnah Torah. Although it is a part of Torah, yet it is somewhat different than the first four books. Mishnah Torah was said to the generation that went into Eretz Yisrael, whereas the first four were basically given to the generation that died out in the desert. The people that went into Eretz Yisrael needed certain things covered, forewarned, possible dangers that didn't exist for the people who had stayed in the desert. The difference between the generation that went into the land and the generation that stayed in the desert is that the generation that stayed in the desert, the Deir HaMidbar, they were called Deir Deya. They were a generation of understanding and of knowledge of godliness. They were on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, or in the category of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was able to see godliness. In fact, the generation that died in the desert are the ones who saw the giving of the Torah, they saw the splitting of the sea, they saw the miracles, the plagues in Egypt. They saw godliness. And that was the level of Moshe. And therefore, they had no connection, they had no relationship with the physicality and the worldliness, earthiness of the earth. But the people that went into the land, they didn't see. This was the younger generation that were born in the desert. They didn't see all these miracles, they didn't see godliness. They were not that level, that generation of Deya, of knowledge of godliness on the level of vision, of seeing. By them, godliness came through hearing. It was on the level of hearing rather than seeing. And that's why Moshe says to them, Va'ata Yisrael Shema, and now hear about godliness. The difference between hearing and seeing, of course, is that when you see the whole thing, without any restrictions, without any limitations. So that once you see something, nothing can shake you from the impression that that vision made on you. There can't be any doubt, there can't be any suffix. But when you hear something, even though you understand it clearly, and you have a mental picture of it, so that you're very familiar with what you heard, still there is some room for a little bit of doubt. And the understanding and the conviction that comes from hearing can be weakened in time and with a challenge. And that's why Mishnah Torah was said to the generation that went into Eretz Yisrael, since they were on a lower level and there was a danger that they could develop doubts or a weakness in their commitment and their attachment to godliness. So they needed the words the teachings of Mishneh Torah to strengthen them and to prevent the weakening or the doubts from happening. On the other hand, although this generation that went into the land were lower than the previous generation, which is actually the case with all generations, the earlier the generation, the higher, and the later the generation, the lower it is, yet, in spite of the fact that they were lower, they had a certain mila, a certain virtue that made them greater than the previous generation, than the generation of the Midbar. As it says concerning the generation of the Midbar, ki levosem ad ata elamnucha velanachala, that generation never really reached the level of godliness that is settled and permanent, as it was when the Beis HaMikdash was built, or when the Mishkan was in Shiloh. That happened only for the generation that did go into Israel. And the reason for it is because through the Yezida, the very fact that the Jews of the generation that went into Israel were descended into the lower level where they did involve themselves with physical things, with running the country and so on. Through that Yezida, through that descent, they were able to rise to a true higher level, which is the binyan of a menucha v'nachla, a godliness that is settled and established. So we see that in this Shabbos, in Parshas Devarim, the beginning of Mishneh Torah, we have two opposite conditions coming together. On the one hand, they had to be told in very critical terms what their weaknesses are and what the danger of their coming to the land is, and so on and so forth, which is what the Chumash Devarim is all about. And at the same time, this Yezida, this descent, brought about a true ascent, a true Aliyah. The same is true also with Shabbos Chazayin. In Shabbos Chazayin, we also see two opposites. On the one hand, Shabbos Chazayin is one of the 9 days. In fact, it is the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, the Shabbos before the anniversary of the Churban, of the destruction of the Temple. But on the other hand, through this Yezida, and only through this Yezida, can we come to the ultimate Aliyah, to the ultimate ascent, to the ultimate permanence of godliness. As the Baidichever said, that Shabbos Chazayin, every Jew is shown the third Beis HaMikdash. And the third Beis HaMikdash is the one that can never be destroyed, which is higher and greater than the previous two Batei Mikdash, which will be built, the Meheda B'Yameinu, through Mashiach Tzidkenu. So we see that here also there's a coming together of the descent that eventually leads to the greater ascent. We spoke many times, the Rebbe says, about the fact that the sadness that is associated with the 3 weeks or the 9 days should not affect Shabbos, because Shabbos is supposed to be b'simcha, and what's more, that Shabbos, the simcha has to be, this Shabbos, the simcha has to be greater than on a regular Shabbos, in order that there should be no doubt that the sadness of the 9 days has crept into the Shabbos. The explanation of this is that Shabbos is a taste, a foretaste of the time of Osud Love, the world to come, which is referred to as Yom Shekulei Shabbos, a permanent millennium of Shabbos. And since in the time to come, through the Geula, through the redemption, there will be nothing left, no impression left of the Golos, all the pain and all the sadness of Golos will be completely removed. That's why on Shabbos also we have to remove all signs and all reminders of sadness, and on Shabbos have only Simcha. This explains only why on Shabbos you have to avoid the things that are sad or that bring sadness. But why and in what way can the Shabbos be more joyful? So it is known that the Geula that comes after a Golus leads to a much higher level than the level we were on before the Golus. Because if you go back only to the level that you were on before, then the Golus didn't accomplish anything at all. So this is true concerning every Golus and every Geula, that after a Golus, the Geula is greater, as it was, for example, with Mitzrayim. So the improvement, the increased godliness, the increased goodness that comes with the Geula after a Golus, we see in Mitzrayim, in Mitzrayim as the symbol of all the Golias. We see it there in that during the Golus, in Mitzrayim we were able to pick up the divine sparks that were hidden there, which is the purpose for which we went into Golus in the first place. So that if there's a Geula after the Golus, we now have a state of godliness that includes the divine sparks that previously was locked away or lost in the unholiness of Egypt. And that's even in the Geula of Mitzrayim, which was only a temporary Geula. So how much more so when it comes to the permanent true Geula that we're going to have soon? This is a complete Geula, which is not followed by further Golus. So here certainly the Geula puts us on a level much higher than we were before the Golus. It's a whole new world. And it's a world in which Golus not only doesn't exist, but a world in which Golus cannot exist. And that's different, of course, from the time of the peacefulness that existed before the Golus. Obviously, if the Golus then came about, then even before the Golus, there was the potential for Golus. So the Geula was not complete. But now that we have the complete redemption, there won't be a possibility even for another Golus. And so Shabbos, which is the Shabbos of the 3 weeks, which represents a taste of the time to come, of the world to come, Yom Shekulei Shabbos, and therefore you have to have a greater amount of joy than on a regular Shabbos. Because the whole idea of this Shabbos is that it gives us the strength to change the sadness of the 3 weeks into a time of joy. The beginning of Golus, the first mention of Golus, took place during the Bris Bein Apsodim, when God was making a covenant with Avraham, and he told him that his children would be slaves, enslaved in a foreign land, and there in Remez, there are hints to the future Golus as well, not only Golus Mitzrayim, but the Golus that would follow as well. So the question is, a Krisus Bris, a covenant, is when two people feel a greater love, an infinite love, an endless love for each other that is not dependent on any particular reason or any particular circumstance. So that even if the reason or the circumstance changes or goes away, the love will remain because it is a love that is not dependent on a third thing and therefore doesn't end if the conditions end. So this internal pnimiyazdikir love that knows no bounds, this is expressed in a covenant when two people feel that kind of love and promise eternal and endless love for each other. So the question is, how is it that at a time of Bris Bein Apsodim, when the covenant was being made, where God was pledging an endless love for the Jew, that at that time there was a mention of Golus? And although it says that Golus was, that Avraham chose Golus for his children because it's not as bad as Gehenna, but that was the choice, that the sins should be erased either through Golos or through Gehenim. And Avram chose Golos because it is better than of the two. It is the lesser of the two evils. But that doesn't answer the question how the subject of punishment of Golos and of Gehenim came up in the first place at a time when this endless love was being expressed. So the Rebbe says, in order to understand this, we have to understand the whole union of Golos itself. We see that Golos is not only a punishment and a rectification of sin, because we see that the longer we stay in Golos, the worse the Golos gets. And if it were punishment for sin, if it were a retribution for sin, then every day that goes by, a little bit of the sin is already forgiven, so that the Golos should get lighter or easier, and the godliness should become more and more revealed with each passing day. And yet we see that the opposite is true. That we see this with Mitzrayim, that the first 17 years that the Jews were in Mitzrayim were very good years, and as long as the Shvatim were alive, Yaakov's children were alive, there was no enslavement. Then even after the enslavement began, it wasn't as bad as it was in the end, when Moshe came to talk to Paray, and Paray increased the amount of work and made things worse. So in the very last days before the Golos was over, the Golos was at its worst. We see also in our Golos that at the beginning of the Golos, we first had Tanoim, then we had Amazoyim, the authors of the Mishnah, the authors of the Gemara, then we had Goyim and so on, and with every passing generation, the godliness became more and more concealed. Until in our generation, which is called Ikvas de Mashiach, we are called the heels of Mashiach because of it, because Mashiach is so close that we can hear his footsteps. But on the other hand, we are like the heels, the lowest part of the body that has the least amount of life. And as it is referred to as the Malach HaMavos of the body. So we see that there is something more to Golos than the punishment for sin. With this we'll understand a strange statement, or a strange event that the Medrash mentions. And that is that on the ark that contained the Ten Commandments, there were two figures of children. And when God was pleased with the Jews, in a good time when Jews were being good, the two figures faced each other. They were face to face. But when God was angry, it showed in those two figures in the Kruvim, in that their faces were turned from each other. So the Medrash says that when the enemy went into the Beis HaMikdash to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, they found the Kruvim facing each other, and they went and spread this throughout the world, telling all the nations of what they found. So the question is, here is a time of Golos, of Churban, they're destroying the Beis HaMikdash because God is not pleased, and yet the figures were facing each other. So Chassidus says that Golos is similar to a teacher and a student, where the teacher, the Rav, is Mashpia, is teaching the student great wisdom, and in doing so, he is paying full attention, his focus is completely on the student. But if during the lesson the teacher suddenly realizes, has a new idea, comes up with a brilliant new idea which he wants to give to the student, at first the teacher gets wrapped up and lost in the thought of this new idea that had just occurred to him. And the greater and higher this idea is, the more the teacher has to devote himself and immerse himself in the idea, which takes him away from the attention and the focus on the student. So because the teacher wants to teach this new idea to the student, he has to separate himself for a while from the student, at least externally, and devote himself to preparing the idea that he just had for the student. Now, externally, the student will experience this as abandonment, as golos and darkness. But the truth is that inwardly, beneath the surface. This is actually a preparation for devotion to the student. This concealment is a preparation for a greater revelation. So the teacher is unavailable because he's going to make himself more available than ever. So this darkness, the silence, is really a preparation for communication and for Gilui. And the same is true also with Golos. Golos is when God gets focused on the Geula, on the revelation, the new revelation that will come at the end of the Golos. Then for a while it seems, at least externally, that God is not paying attention or is not as devoted as he was before to the people, to the Jewish people. But the truth is that this darkness is only temporary, and its purpose is to bring a greater revelation. And from the fact that the teacher turns his attention from the student, whom he loves, to whom he is devoted, that itself proves that this new revelation is worth the temporary break of communication. The temporary silence is justified because of how great and how wonderful the new revelation is going to be. And the same is true also with the Golos. And so the Bris Bein Apsodim, when God's love for the Jew was at its highest, or was being expressed at its highest, at that time the Golos was mentioned, because Golos is only externally a negative thing, but internally it is a preparation for the highest communication and for the highest form of sharing. And so also with the Beis HaMikdash, when they came in to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, they found that the Kruvim were facing each other, like in a time of God's approval, when God is happy with the people. And that is because the Ark is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies, which is the inner level, the Pnimius of the Beis HaMikdash. And there in the Pnimius, in the internal level, there the Golos is experienced on its internal meaning, on its internal intention, which is only for the good and not negative at all. And so although externally there was a churban going on, the Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed and the Golos was beginning, but internally, in the inner chamber, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there the inner purpose of this Golos was revealed and was obvious, and that's why the Kruvim were facing each other, because this darkness was really an expression of God's approval and of God's desire to share with the Jews a higher level of Geula, a permanent, as we said before, a Geula that completely eliminates the possibility of Golos, which had never existed before. Because prior to this, even though there was a Beis HaMikdash, and the Jews were doing mitzvahs and living according to Torah, and everything was fine, but there was still a condition in the world that allowed for the possibility of future failure, a future sin, and a future Golos and destruction. This was a preparation, though, for a Geula that brings about a whole new condition, a condition of a world in which there can be no failing, in which there can be no sinning, and therefore there can be no Golos, there can be no Churban after this. And that is the third Beis HaMikdash that is shown on Shabbos Chazoin, a Beis HaMikdash that represents a whole new condition, a whole new reality in the world, a world that cannot fail, a world that cannot destroy itself, a world that cannot go back into Golos. And so what is the lesson from all of this? The lesson that Rebbe says is that as we see the darkness getting darker and the Golos getting worse, a darkness that had never existed, the lowest of all level of all generations and so on, we need to know that that's a preparation for the Geula, a preparation for the light. And in order to help this happen, in order to bring about this Geula, we are expected to do the Talmud, the student who feels the darkness because the teacher has shifted his attention from the student to the new idea that is being developed and being revealed. So the student is asked to do two things. Number one, the student must know that this darkness is only temporary because it is only on the surface, and inwardly, beneath the surface, it is only for the purpose of Gilui, for the purpose of goodness. And number two, he has to devote himself to his teacher with a greater devotion and a longing and a thirsting for the teacher's attention, in spite of the fact that externally it seems that the teacher has abandoned him. The student has to maintain a devotion and a longing and a thirsting for the teacher's attention, for the communication, just as much as during the time when the teacher was focused on the student and was teaching, and maybe even more so. As the Alter Rebbe used to say in the time of his Dveikus, Mili Bashamayim, what do I have in heaven? He would say, I don't want heaven. I don't want them at all. I don't want Gan Eden. I don't want Olam Haba. I want only you alone. Gan Eden being a place where Torah is revealed, and Olam Haba is a place where godliness is given as a reward for the mitzvah that we performed before the Geula, during the Golus. And the Alter Rebbe says, that's not what I want. I don't want the gifts of Gan Eden. I don't want the gifts of Olam Haba. I want you alone, God alone. And that kind of a longing, that kind of a thirsting, it actually brings about a hastening of the Gili, of this new light that we will receive in the Geula HaSida, B'mehera B'yameinu, with the coming of Mashiach.